Good afternoon.
Good
Welcome.
afternoon.
Can you please put your microphone on mute?
Sorry.
Good afternoon. Welcome to this meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel on Tuesday, the 8th of July, 2025. My name is John Brunton, and I've been appointed chair for today's meeting. This is a formal meeting, and on behalf of the council, I acknowledge the traditional people of this place, the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation. For countless generations, they were part of the country on which we meet today. I also acknowledge those from other First Nations who are now people of this place. We acknowledge and pay our respect to elders, past, present, and emerging, and those who work for truth, justice and equity. As we begin our meeting, I will invite the members of the panel to introduce themselves. As I said earlier, my name is John Brunton, and I'm a registered planner, a fellow of the Planning Institute of Australia, and a member of the World Heritage Body, the International Council on Monuments and Sites. The Minister for Planning has appointed me as one of the chairs for this panel. The other panel members will introduce themselves, beginning with our community representative, Leah Richards.
Thank you, Chairperson. Hello, my name is Leah Richards and I'm a community representative on the Inner West Planning Panel. I've been an Inner West resident for 40 years. I'm hearing impaired and I have physical disabilities. My tertiary qualifications are in modern languages, occupational health and safety, and urban ecology. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Leah. Sharon Veal.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sharon Veal. I am a member of the Planning Institute of Australia and have formal qualifications in urban and regional planning. I'm also a practicing historian and I work as a heritage consultant.
And Brian Kirk.
My name is Brian Kirk. I have postgraduate qualifications in town planning and in land economics. I've been practicing as a town planner for over 40 years, the majority of that time as either an employee or contractor to local government, and I am a council appointed expert to this panel. Thank you.
The first matter on the agenda for today is declarations of interest. We have 9 development applications on the agenda, and each panel member has signed a declaration stating whether they are aware of any conflicts of interest. Leah Richards has made a declaration in relation to item 9, and I'll now ask Leah to declare that conflict.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I declare that I have a non-pecuniary conflict of interest with item 9, as the owner and one of the submitters are known to me, so I will absent myself from all discussions of this item.
Thank you, Leah. While I have no conflicts of interest, I will excuse myself from items 3 and 5. These are applications for the review of decisions made at previous panel meetings. At that time, the panel refused to grant consent to the applications, but the applicants have both made further submissions requesting a review of those earlier decisions. So items 3 and 5 will be dealt with as the last items on the agenda. So after item 10, I will vacate the chair and Brian Kirk will perform duties of chairing the meeting for those 2 items. I will not participate in the discussion or deliberations on those items. Panel members have made themselves familiar with all of the material relevant to each application being considered today. This includes inspecting the subject sites, reading the agenda and all of the associated assessment reports, and all of the submissions that have been received. Early today, we also had the benefit of a briefing by council officers where we had matters further explained. So before I ask members of the public to make their presentations, I need to address some procedural matters. As you would have heard, this is a public meeting and everything that you say is being recorded. So I suggest that you exercise care with how you present your submission. It's important that all attendees keep their microphones on mute unless you've been requested to make your presentation. Once your presentation is finished, please set your microphone on mute again. We have 16 people registered to address the panel today. Those who wish to speak against a proposal will speak first. And I have objections listed for three items. After the objectors are for each item, applicants have the opportunity to provide additional information and respond to objections. I am aware that panel members may wish to ask some presenters questions or ask you to expand on your presentation. I ask speakers to be respectful of everyone. Please limit your presentations to 3 minutes and use your time effectively. Objectors do not need to repeat comments made by a previous speaker. We look forward to hearing from you. After the panel has heard from all speakers and been through all the items on the agenda, the panel will go into a closed session where members will consider what has been presented in addition to all the other information submitted, and they will make the determinations on the 9 development applications. As I said earlier, for 3 of the items, the panel will consist of 3 members, not 4. While the panel will consider the council officer's report and recommendations, the panel may come to a different conclusion, or if consent is issued, it may impose different conditions. The panel's decisions on the agenda items will be published on the council's website by the end of this week. We can now move on to the first item on the agenda. Item 1 is a standing item, being a report on pending matters that have been delayed, but which will be coming to the panel in due course. There are currently 2 items that have been delayed, and this is to provide the applicants with an opportunity to overcome shortcomings in their proposals. Those applications are scheduled to be before the panel within the next 2 months. Item 2 on the agenda is modification application 2025/0095, which seeks approval for modifications to an approved shop top housing development at 246 to 248 Wardell Road, Marrickville. We have no objectors wishing to speak to this proposal. I do have Mark Bowman and Brett Daintree registered to speak and potentially respond to any questions. So I'd ask Mark and Brett to take yourself off mute and you can make your presentation to the panel.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, my name is Mark Bowman. I'm the applicant and the architect for the development. I don't have a presentation really as such. I'm more here just to nominate myself if there are any questions that need answering on the development. Otherwise, I'm happy to pass it back.
Is Brett Daintree there? I can't see his name.
Brett's the town planner on the development. That he may be late or something. I'm not sure.
Okay. I just had a question. One of the threshold issue in dealing with the modification is the development substantially the same as the original proposal? And I've noted that with many of the aspects of this development, it's increasing by about 5%. So the height's 5% higher, the floor space is 5% higher. I just need to be satisfied myself that it is still substantially the same development. Would you like to address that or speak on that?
Yes, okay. Probably Brett would probably be the better one to speak on that because it is specifically to do with the planning controls. But I would say that the development hasn't increased in height. The lift overrun was always going up to the communal open space anyway, which was on the roof. So we've added 3 more units on the top floor. So although we've added those 3 units, we haven't actually added more height. We've added some additional bulk at the top. But yes, we have added some additional FSR for those 3 units. But we do consider that it is a small percentage. We're keeping the development largely the same in terms of elevational treatment, and generally the bulk of the development as well. And the units on the top floor are also set back on some sides from the top as well.
Do other panel members have some questions? Leah?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Mark, I just wanted to clarify on level 6 that access to the communal open space didn't impose any amenity impacts on the residents of the one bedroom unit. Looking at drawing number DA108, revision 08,
yes.
I expect that residents travel up in the lift to level 6, turn right into the lobby, and then proceed down the ramp to the communal open area. And there is an area abutting the balcony that services the one bedroom unit. I'm not sure what kind of boundary or composition that is, or the height. And likewise, the other edge of the balcony against the landscaping. Could you explain?
Yeah, sure. So against the landscaping, there's a 1 meter high planter wall. Again, so which forms the edge of the planter. And then on top of that, there is a batten fence. And that batten fence returns around both on the side of the planter and also on the side of the opposite side of the lift. That's 1.8 meters high. We did kind of go through that process and making sure that there was some privacy for that balcony.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Sure.
Brian, did you have any questions?
No questions. Thank you, Chair.
Sharon, any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
I think we've finished with that item. Thank you, Mark, for being with us and for answering our questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, panel.
We can now move on to item 4, which is 162 Darley Street and 169 Lord Street. I have Graham Bakewell and Ben Black listed to speak. Ben, do you want to go first, or do you just wish to answer questions?
Sure, no, that is essentially it. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the panel members for the opportunity. We've had a recommendation for approval with minimal conditions, so we're obviously happy with that, and here to really answer any questions of the panel.
I just had a quick question about 169 Lord Street is going to now be a smaller site, retaining the existing building. Is there any information about what's intended to be, that building's to be used for?
In the interim, in the short term, it's just intended to be retained as a single dwelling. The owner is contemplating whether it may become a dual occupancy or a pair of semis, similar to what's happened on neighbouring sites.
Okay. You're saying it's used as a dwelling now?
That's right. On Darley Street, sorry, did you say Lord Street?
No, I'm saying Lord Street.
Sorry. Lord Street is used as a storage facility at the moment, and it has historic approval for such. So yep. that's continuing to today. It's still leased presently. So that would be continuing in the short term. The owner, I'm aware, is weighing up his options, so to speak, with respect to doing adaptive reuse. So that adaptive reuse, we provided a submission to the council on this, was to reuse, in accordance to the LEP, the form of the building that's there, turn it into residential style use, and with the intent being to utilise that new reuse section as open space.
Do other panel members have any questions?
I'm getting
no's all around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
We can now move on to John Street. Oh, no, not John Street. We're going to item seven, which is Liverpool Road, Ashfield. I have several speakers for this one. The first person I have is Jack Wu.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Chair.
Would you like to make an address to us?
Yep. Do you mind if I share my information online?
If you need to, yep.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so let me coming back to the first page. Yeah, so I opposite the DA submitted by the developer. Our building is very complicated. We have three stratas in the same building. And we desire fire audience community where truth and justice are valued. In our community, we have three stratas. One is us, the residential, which is managed by William Strata. Second one is the retail, is the shop on the Liverpool Street, managed by Ned Strata. And we have a BMC, which is combined with the shopping mall, residential, and the retail. But for the BMC Strata plan, PS 97460B, we contribute up to 97% of the strata levy, and retail owner contribute to 3% of the strata levy. Firstly, I want to mention, in the DA, they claim they passed the BMC meeting, which was submitted and approved back in September last year. That DA, that motion has not been acknowledged to the relative parties, which is only involved the retail and the shopping mall. The manager from the Nestrada called Mika, he claimed he sent through the letters to our strata, which is the William. We asked them what's happening, but at the end, we actually didn't see any meeting on those days. And Jay, he has never received any emails from them as well. So this meeting is totally invalid and it's totally violate our rights and our presence of the meeting. Next one, you can see all the meetings that all the emails the strata manager has been sent to the next strata contact, Mika, regarding the notice of the agenda. It is invalid and unlawful. We have these issues with the shop one owner as well. Shop one owner and shop 213, they used to have a meeting which has not been I acknowledge her as well. So this is kind of trick, I guess, that Mika play around with Estrada inside the 250 Liverpool Road. I'll just show you that's all the invited and lawful meetings they claim they have it with the shop one and shop two and three, which never has been happened. And shop two and three owners has signed the Strata
Oh,
contract with
excuse me. Excuse me, Chair. That is 3 minutes.
Okay. So
I
Jack,
got a few
anyone, please?
I got a few pages to show. Firstly, the shop three has the retail three shop has open area. You can see has been circled in green, and we got a big lower for the car park P1 in residentials, just for new air intaking to the car park. If they enclose the whole area, firstly they want to change the lower to the other side, which is currently concrete. That's going to change the structure of the building. Secondly, we won't have enough new airs coming through the to the car park. That's a hazard for the residential car park. You can see how big the lower on the left-hand side, and the plan they want to change is on the right-hand side, which is much more smaller comparing to what we have now. And secondly, the structure of the building is all concrete. We can't just change it. That will change the whole structure of the building.
Okay.
And last one is about the fare system costs and all other damages to the whole shared facilities. We contribute 97% of the strata fees, and retail only contribute 3%. And the developer has never discussed with us for all those costs and how much it will be paid.
Thank you very much, Jack. The next person I have to speak is Ji Q.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Okay, my name is G, and I'm also speaking today on behalf of the residential owner community to object this DA. In addition to what Jack has mentioned, one of our main concerns is also part of the pictures shown is the proposed change to the car park supply air louver. Basically, the DA proposes to alter the location, direction, and structure of that one. The garage air supply louver is the facility that exclusively serves our residential car park. It is not a private structure belonging to any retail owner. And just want to mention that no retail lot has any car spaces in our building as well. Changing that one, that louver, will require like cutting into the building's external wall, and that will modify our building's exterior and could also impact how the ventilation and fire system works. That is the only louvered vent in the level one car park area, and it's one of the key items to our fire protection service in that area. So we consider it is as a major renovation, and it will heavily affect the whole residential owners directly. However, as mentioned, we were not asked, we were not informed, and we just do not agree to this change. And in relation to that, we have fire safety concern. This work proposed under the DA will require installation or an upgrade of the fire safety systems. In the past, the false fire alarms from retail areas have always been a recurring problem, and we are worried that these changes could make that worse. Yet there has been no discussion of such with our residential owners about any impacts, costs, like maintenance or responsibilities with regard to any of those. Just want to mention as well, like this DA will also affect the areas with some critical shared underground pipe work. There are gas, cold water, drainage, treat waste, and fire hydrants pipe works, all of which serves both residential and retail strata, for which we pay 97% of the strata levy, while the retail owners pay only 3%. And some additional notes on the legal issue and process concerns we have, like this applicant claims that BMC passed on the motion supporting this DA. However, the residential strata and our representatives from the owner's side we were never notified of this meeting. The NetStrata, BMC's strata manager, claimed that all strata were informed, but that's just simply not true. Hence, any outcome that's coming out of any of those meetings can be considered simply invalid, for which our strata manager Jay has already notified the council in a formal way by email. Just some last notes, this DA with the same content has been rejected a few times before, but it just keeps coming back without like proper consultation and not addressing any of the core issues. We never agreed to alter any shared property just to expand this retail shop. So we ask that our views from the owner's side to be fully considered, and we respect the council's role from the panel and the chair's side, and we strongly urge for just a rejection of that DA.
Excuse me, Chair, that is 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. I think she must have timed herself because she made it just in time. Do we have any questions from any panel members for either Jack or Xi?
No, none for me.
No, I feel that the questions that I had have been really comprehensively addressed, the ones about the facade and the air conditioning. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Okay, we'll now hear from Sanjay Halasaji on behalf of the applicant.
Thank you, Chair. Can you all hear me?
Yep.
Thank you so much. Firstly, thank you for the opportunity. And I just want to start with this statement. This development application has a long history. First initiated in June 2021. This is now our third DA for essentially the same design. And I want to highlight a consistent pattern. Every single DA we have submitted had generated 20 to 25 submissions from the residential owners. This volume of objections automatically triggers a review by the local planning panel, understandably. Yet, despite these submissions, every single DA has been recommended for approval to the LPP. This consistency in recommendations suggests our designs are sound and align with planning guidelines. It is truly unfortunate and baffling that I only get to hear the residents' specific concerns during the LPP meetings. From our perspective, the progressive nature of the DA should have been minimal impact, and we have been eager to understand and address any perceived issues. For the past 4 years, I have made countless attempts to genuinely meet and brief the residential owners about this DA. My goal has always been to hear their issues directly and work towards a win-win solution. This has proven to be a mountainous task, as our attempts at communication have never been reciprocated or even met with courtesy. We have literally employed every possible strategy to engage with residential members. We have made a proactive outreach over the years. I have made numerous failed attempts to communicate proactively and in good faith outside the formal DA process with residents and the strata managers via email and phones. I have even attempted a fair trading mediation in October 2023. We even applied for mediation with fair trading, a process that was outrightly declined by the Residential Owners Corporation. We have made a attempt to get into their general meeting, made an agenda in the month of March 2024. After the council, there was a misdirection from the LPP saying that we need a residential owners corporation approval, which was not the right decision. However, this was outrightly rejected, and there was no jurisdiction to hold a meeting about this DA as part of the residential. Instead, it was only part of the BMC. And as you understand, BMC is complicated. It holds three entities as part of the Building Management Committee, which stands for BMC. It includes Ashfield Mall, which has a 5 voting average. And
Excuse me, Chair, that is 3 minutes. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just going to wrap up. And residential strata, which has 2 votes, and retail is only 1 vote. In regards to the number of objections raised in regards to the cost, it is outside the LPP. This is not something that I can actually do anything, but this is something how the building was built and was basically given to us. That's where I end. Any questions, I'm happy to answer, please.
Okay. Do any panel members have questions for Sanjay? Brian?
No, thank you.
Sharon? No. And Leah? No, no questions for you, Sanjay. Well, thank you very much for responding to the concerns of the residents. The panel will now consider all of those submissions. Our next item is item 9. We don't have any submissions or speakers on item 8. The next item 9, relates to 167 Norton Street at Leichhardt. It's the demolition of existing structures, construction of four-storey mixed-use development containing ground floor commercial and 7 dwelling units. The first person I have listed to speak is Michelle Hobbs. I also have Tatiana and Gina, who are all speaking on behalf of the proposal. I'm not sure whether you want to speak individually or just answer questions, but I've got Michelle listed to speak first. So that's Michelle Hobbs.
I'm here.
Yes, Michelle.
Yes, I'm here.
Would you like to address us, please?
Okay. Hi, everybody. I wrote a submission on behalf of support for this development. I wholeheartedly support it. I hope it is approved. Gina and La Gardenia have been an integral part of the Inner West community and the Italian community for many, many years. I think the store itself has been there since 1974. So although she's competing obviously with larger stores, she still holds a firm place with children and adults alike in the area. It's a busy shop. It's frequented often by many people from all over that visit and not only live in Leichhardt but surrounding areas and also around the country and the world actually. The store is well known and Gina is well respected. I think the development shows her respect for the community around her by providing herself the opportunity to stay relevant in moving times. And as the store is aging, she would like to redevelop and have something new. Also, the design complements the existing streetscape via the new store. So it also provides much needed community housing, which I think the area needs, so she's put great thought into that. So I'd really like to see her development approved if possible.
Okay. Thank you. Do any panel members have questions for Michelle? I can see no's. Okay, thank you. I have Tatiana Yurik Simovic.
Yes, I'm with Gina, thank you. So Gina can speak after me, if that's okay then. So thank you for the opportunity to speak. So we believe that the panel should approve this application. Council released a fairer future for the Inner West in May this year, and our proposal complies with the aims of this new plan. No need for 4.6 variation request as no LEP standard is varied. The proposal is for height of 14.4 meters and the FSR of 1.72 to 1, including bonuses given by clause 4.4A and affordable housing. But the draft LEP amendments for the site, the FSR is 3 to 1 and the maximum height is 23.3 meters which is 8.9 meters higher than what's in the proposal. This confirms that our proposal is in line with the desired future character and therefore 0.5 additional FSR for shop-top housing under the current LEP is justified in our opinion. It seems that Council disregarded Department of Planning circular on non-discretionary standards as well as submitted SCE and legal advice from Aaron Gadiel of Miles and Oakley. Regarding the definition of shop-top housing, if long-term existing use rights in the recent court decision are disregarded, unit B1 on the ground level at the back can be converted to a commercial use or a communal room for residents. This can be included as a condition of consent. The impact on the streetscape is negligible, as shown in perspectives and photos submitted in the design verification statement. There are many disapprovals and criticism of our proposal in Council's report to the panel based, I have to say, on wrong assumptions. So the response to just some of those, for example, the three existing side windows on the neighboring boundary at semi-detached dwelling are illegal by the BCA standards, and these windows are also not shown on the approved DA for the site. Or, for example, on page 55, the ADG provides flexibility regarding solar access requirement for the communal open space for small lots within business zones or in a dense urban area. Or, for example, the acoustic privacy will be ensured by the implementation of the passive house design and construction. So we have to say also that Council's claim that the proponent has not acted on the recommendations given at pre and post DA meetings is simply not true in our opinion. Our team has provided detailed tables in all documents submitted addressing every single issue raised by Council's team.
Excuse me, Chair, that is 3 minutes.
Thank you, that's all. Now Gina will speak.
Well, just before you move on, we might have some questions for you.
Sorry.
Can I ask you a question? You talked about existing use rights, or
it relates to the form of the building. If we are talking about the shape of shop-top housing, that residential use cannot touch the ground. At the moment, the residential use, which is the dwelling above, is actually behind the shop and it's on the ground.
Yeah, but that's a dwelling house, isn't it?
No, it would be shop-top housing because you can't say the dwelling above the shop is a shop-top housing, should be. By the definition, I know I'm a registered planner like yourself, and I know the controversy about the definition of shop-top housing, and we acknowledge that in our SCE. And if it's least the something that would make this proposal approved, we suggest that it's a condition of consent included to convert this in either a part of the commercial use or, let's say, a communal room for the residents of the of this development.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do other panel members have any questions? I don't believe so. I can't see Leah. Okay.
Leah has a conflict of interest declared, so.
So is, I'll now move on to Gina, who I understand is the owner of the existing premises, and would you like to address us?
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Gina Bortolin Papa. I have been living in Leichhardt since 1952 and running my business, Leichhardt Denia Baby and Children's Wear, since 1973. I now want to renovate my shop and property, like the Marlborough Picture Theatre, Harold Hawkins building across the road. My architect has designed a beautiful building with studio units, and I will return to my shop, my new shop, living above as soon as possible. But I felt very disappointed after our meeting with council planners that we had to withdraw our application and not allowed to build on my property. My original building was demolished in 1959 and rebuilt in 1963. So it's not a heritage building. Also, disappointed, I engaged a lawyer to address all concern in a letter to council. Please read that letter. I made a complaint in writing to the general manager, mayor, and councillors to show a full transparency and the stressful experience it caused me. A week later, I received a community letter from Mayor Darcy Burns on council new zoning plans, allowing to build on my land up to 23 meters high. After 73 years and my contribution serving the community together with the support of my neighbours, local and to return to my shop, I would think I deserve a fair go. With the support from council to approve my application and working towards for the future plans on Norton Street. Thank you.
Thank you, Tatiana. Do any panel members have questions for Tatiana?
I think Gina.
Yeah, that's sorry.
I'm Gina.
On the screen, you're not.
Sorry?
On the screen, you're not Gina, you're Tatiana.
Okay. Fair enough.
Sharon, any questions? I think Sharon did have a question earlier about when was the current building erected, and I think you've answered that because it was you said it was rebuilt.
Yes, it was rebuilding. Yep. 1963.
Can I quickly answer that question? Is it in a heritage impact statement submitted with the search of the previous history of DAs? The front of the building was demolished completely in 1959. And behind the rest of the development was rebuilt in 1963. We submitted photos and further. Yep. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I don't think Sharon has any questions. So thank you very much, everyone, for your presentations on that item. And the panel will consider that in due course. We can now move to item 10.
Chair, we might need to just wait till Lee gets back.
I've returned, Chairperson.
Oh, good.
Item 10 is 28 Eaton Street, Camperdown.
Thank you. Can you see my screen, Chair?
I don't need to see your screen, thank you.
Oh, you don't? I've got a presentation up I've shared.
But that's, you jump the gun.
Apologies.
Would you like to take it down?
Of course. Apologies.
Our first speaker on item 10, which is 28 Eaton Street Camperdown, which is for alterations and additions to an existing dwelling house. We have the one objector, who is Andrew Ireland. So if Andrew's there, can Andrew speak with us, please?
Yep. Thank you. This is Andrew Ireland. How are you doing?
Please proceed.
Okay. I'm just hopefully sharing a screen as well. My name's Andrew Ireland. I'm representing myself and my wife, who are the owners of 95 Australia Street. We currently live nearby and hope to one day move into this home. We're concerned by the impacts proposed by 28 Eaton Street on our home. Now, we understand the issues with internal box gutters, inadequate roof falls. However, the proposed excessive heights, massive massing, site cover, and subsequent impacts will have direct effects on us. The proposal exceeds the floor space ratio by 13.78, or close to 20 square meters, leading to overdevelopment that compromises both the control and its objectives. The resulting it results in increased building form, massing, overshadowing, permeable cover, lack of landscaping and available deep soil area, lack of tree canopy, and impacts the use and enjoyment of adjoining properties. The development exceeds the height of building. So as initially submitted, You will see there was a 9.5 meter building height, which was established from the ground line. You can see the ground line established in the top drawing. In the second drawing, which was later submitted, they included pop-up windows and modified the ground line to the floor levels. That was not supported by earlier surveys of the site, which are available on council and on council's website, and earlier surveys of the adjoining site, which indicate that the current proposal before you with the pop-up windows exceeds the height of building. The removal of the natural ground level pervious space and its substitution with a proposed garage and basement and minimal depth roof garden fails to meet the New South Wales planning definitions of pervious and impervious space, or pervious space, and therefore creates stormwater issues which directly pour onto our property. The addition at the front, including the bullnose, so the proposed addition at the front, including the bullnose, which is the section there, dominates and is inconsistent with the remnant 1892 single-storey period dwelling. The bullnose is contradictory to the form. It's a parapet style. The proposed excessive height bulk massing at the front significantly deviates from the established character of the area and fails to address the established Eaton Street single-story residential pattern of development and predominantly single-story streetscape. Just going back a bit, what was previously approved in the backyard was what the diagram that you can see here, which showed the backyard as railway sleepers with pervious landscaping in between.
Excuse me, Chair, that is 3 minutes.
Thank you. If I can just conclude.
Yeah.
The rooftop is not in character. Sorry, the garage and rooftop garden and basement is not in character. It has unfiltered overlooking from bedroom W03 to our bedrooms. It uses 30 and 26 Eaton Street, which exceed the LEP, FSR and HOB as precedent. The height of pop-up, we've already said, exceeds the height of building. There are a number of adjustments that can be made to reduce the impacts. The recommendation for approval without significant modification clearly displays inconsistent application of policy and weaknesses and erosion of subjective planning controls, does not promote orderly and economic use, ecological development, good design and amenity, or sustainable management and development of land. The inconsistencies and recommended approval simply illustrate the subjective planning controls and processes are prone to inconsistent application, bias, and undue influence, both perceived and real. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew. Do any panel members have questions for Andrew?
Thank you.
No, I don't believe so. Okay, thank you, Andrew. I'll now go back to Alexander, who I understand might have a presentation for us.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, off you go.
Firstly, I want to thank council planners for their collaborative process. There seems to be a miscommunication at a video conference in April. Therefore, I want to contest condition 21A and B. At this meeting, council said that they had concerns about overshadowing and bulk issues to number 26 and overlooking and privacy concerns to both number 26 and 30 Eaton Street. Pictured are our meeting minutes of the video conference and screenshot of drawing generated live on screen during VC for private open space of approximately 6 meters squared. I do note that the proposed POS of Rev D is 8 meters squared, which is 2 meters greater than the drawing discussed at the video conference. Letter of support from Lyndon Thorley, 22 meters away. Letter of support from William Blackwell, who lives next door. The amenity impacts on number 26 have been addressed via multiple revisions to negate overlooking, overshadowing, acoustic and bulk issues. RevD shadow studies show that the proposed works create only a minimal impact at 9 a.m. on the winter solstice, and the proposal complies with the DCP. I met with an owner of number 26 Eaton Street, Simon, on the 21st of March. He mentioned that he had concerns about bulk, overshadowing and overlooking. We issued this updated design for coordination, however, never heard back from number 26. I note that realestate.com is showing the property as recently sold. Rev D mitigates overlooking, overshadowing, bulk, and acoustic concerns. Views from proposed POS demonstrating no overlooking of number 26 and no direct line of sight to living areas, minimizing acoustic concerns. The closest proposed bedroom and living rooms at number 95 Australia Street are approximately 10 metres away from the proposed POS. The existing and proposed privacy screens on windows at number 95 Australia Street mitigate any overlooking or privacy concerns. The proposal Rev D has been designed to minimise visual and acoustic impacts on surrounding residences. It is a small POS with a width of approximately 2.3 metres, minimising the grouping of large numbers of people. The design meets the objectives of 2.6. Number one, post the VC meeting with Council on April 25, we were of the opinion that Council would consider a well-designed private open space that minimised bulk, visual, acoustic and overshadowing impacts on number 26 and 30. We were shocked to see that the draft conditions, as no communication had been provided by Council, that the draft conditions would not be consistent with the discussions at our video conference. I asked that the LPP rule favourably in our removal of condition 21 A and B. Number two, the fact that we are at the LPP because of one neighbour making 12 objections is a fault in the process, which I understand is being addressed. Number three, the above sections show a recent DA where we were not able to establish a constructive dialogue with Council. On the left is the original DA submission, and the right is what was approved by the Commissioner.
Excuse me, Chair, that is 3 minutes.
Two more sentences, if that's possible. As you can see, these are nearly identical. The cost to our clients, but also the cost to ratepayers of Inner West Council, experts and legal representation is, in my opinion, a misappropriation of resources when our built environment is facing serious challenges around supply, cost and sustainability. And I believe the process needs to be improved. I can address the comments of number 95 if you'd also like.
Yeah, thank you, Alexander. I'll ask, is there any panel members have questions?
No questions, but it might be wise to allow Alexander to respond to the matters raised by number 95.
We can ask a couple of questions. So it's been said that the pop-up window now causes an exceedance of the maximum height of building development standard. Can you respond to that?
Yes, in our first revision, we had assumed that the works were a lightweight construction above a natural ground line. So my understanding of the natural ground line is the actual dirt level. So we had projected up the 9.5 metres. Upon subsequent site visits, and we've provided photographic evidence to the planners that demonstrated that the works were actually a slab on ground. So my understanding of recent local environmental council considerations of the natural ground level is that it is the underside of the slab or 150 millimetres below the bottom slab level. And that's what we have projected within our updated height levels, and the proposed pop-ups are below that height.
Okay. And the other question relates to the use of the bullnose veranda at the second level.
That was a request made by council, and we have updated that into the design at the request of council.
So to answer the question a bit more broadly then, it's not something that the owner has their heart set on, but it was something that was suggested by council officers.
Yes, we've done quite comprehensive urban context analysis of how we mitigate from number 30 Eaton Street and tie that into number 26. And so the one thing we're trying to do is continue the datum height of the parapet. And very much this building is about respecting number 30. We believe it is a positive adaptive reuse of the heritage typology. And we feel that this building is a complementary submissive, trying to find a better word than submissive, a building that respects those particular datums. The question of the awning is not necessarily something that we must have. It was just something that was suggested by council, and we were not opposed to it.
Okay. I can't see Sharon on or Leah on the screen, but do they have any questions?
No, not from me, John.
Chairperson, I might just ask Alex to respond to the concerns about window 3 and overlooking.
Yeah, thank you very much. So window 3, we have designed vertical, so the composition of it, and I'm not sure if it's in our particular proposal. It is actually. I'll just quickly go to that. So the question in the window here is one I've just selected on screen through here. So what we have incorporated is privacy glass to the edges, and then there is vertical fins that prevent any overlooking of the next door neighbours from that particular window. It affords being able to look over Australia Street to Camperdown Park, which is a lovely prospect view from that particular room. And that particular window is, I'm just going to have to make up the number here, but it's greater than 16 metres from number 95 Australia Street. The other thing is that on the current proposal for number 95 Australia Street, there wouldn't be any view to that particular property because of the privacy screens that are part of the proposal and the existing condition at the lower ground floor.
Thank you. Thank you, Alexander. I also have Lyndon Thorley listed to speak as a supporter of the project. So is Lyndon there?
Yes, I am.
So would you like to make a presentation, please?
So, unlike Alex, I'm not quite as prepared for the presentation. But I guess...
Alex is about to take down his presentation, I hope. Thank you.
He's all right. Look, from my point of view, it's not great that projects like this that are relatively low impact and end up in front, ending up in front of the panel on what is essentially a technicality. This makes improvement of existing low-performing housing stock in the inner west more expensive and less likely to happen. That money should be spent on making homes healthy and comfortable and energy efficient instead of on consultants. In my view, but anyway, we're here. Fundamentally, the proposed improves the building form to make it more sympathetic to the streets and significantly improves the thermal comfort and health of the building. And as a byproduct, makes the house easier to heat and cool and reduces mold and condensation issues that are prevalent with colonial buildings in the inner west. I understand that a key concern over the design is the proposed part trafficable, part landscape garage. The revised design, apart from being almost identical to the one approved next door at number 30, affords a sunny and usable space with planting that would otherwise be an overshadowed hardstand car park. This adds urban forest and habitat, cool surfaces, and enhances the streetscape and the amenity of the house itself, and affords a landscape visual privacy buffer between both 26 Eaton Street and the proposed 95 Australia Street. In doing so, addressing potential overlooking without the bulk and overshadowing of fixed privacy screens. Increased planting depth to the street allows for denser and more viable planting to the street side and number 95 Australia Street, whilst increased planting width creates space to have several layers of plants between the trafficable area and the back garden deck or living space at number 26 Eaton. I think the revised design should be supported with the recommended conditions 21A and B imposed, without the imposition of conditions 21A and B imposed, as the design addresses the key concerns that they are meant to be addressing, or the revised design does. And that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
I will now be leaving the meeting because Brian Kirk will be taking over as